And good morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome, dear listeners, here to the Brand Conversation here on this lovely Tuesday. Well, actually, I'm actually giving myself a little bit more, increasing my body heat a bit too much because I mistook the weather in terms of now I've got this jacket on and it's a bit, you know, just a bit too warm. But nonetheless, wherever you find yourself, I hope you guys are tuned in here to Eagle FM, as well as also tuned in to your daily programming as we bring you forward much of the branding and much of the marketing exercises that take place in and around the world of advertising, public relations, communication, communication media strategies, and the works. Now, let's understand this, guys, as mentioned, in terms of where we left off yesterday with our product and innovation combination. So we left off in terms of some of the first and foremost important aspects in terms of having a look at the crash and burn theories or crash and burn stories that actually exist. These crash and burn stories were related to products that were introduced, it wasn't well received, or the product was sort of like first tested in terms of, you know, a testing phase for it in terms of see what the reception looks like. The reception included gathering sentiments from a market, sentiments from customers, stakeholders, competition, and so forth to see what their strategies would be, what their reactions would be, how they would sort of like receive and also convey either positively or negatively their interactions with the product. Now, this all forms, guys, all this forms part of the why a new product innovation matters. As mentioned, last week we looked at branding and innovation. So branding and innovation, you know, you had to elevate from a product. A product is a, you know, almost like a singular phase, but in a more focused approach. And if you had to elevate it up to branding, branding comes now down from a total marketing strategy or a total communication strategy or total sort of like public relations strategy even, or advertising strategy overall. However, if you go down to a product, which is more focused, you've got product innovation taking place. Now, product innovation is and will be part of branding innovation. So branding is your overall experiment and exercise. Product is your more focused, more detailed, more subcategory approach. So what I mean by this, I gave you the example of the Coca-Cola example. So you've got Coca-Cola as the brand, but Coca-Cola owns Fanta. They own the Schweppes products. They own Powerade. They own Bonacqua. They own, who else is there? Fanta. They own Sprite. They own Stony. They own the Sparletta products. So you can see their product width and depth. You see, wow. So, okay. So there's so many products in their stable of products and they can have various branding exercises or brand innovation exercises for each of them, and they can have various product innovation exercises for each of them. Do you get me now? I hope you guys are getting me. Now, on that same discussion, we got into sort of like the crash and burn stories that are legendary, and also there's another aspect that that takes us into today's discussion regarding product and innovation combinations. So one of that, in terms of the why a new product innovation matters, is that it does provide development. It provides development to the product. Now, I'm taking you back now a little bit to the marketing concepts, looking at product theories. So a product theory encompasses the product life cycle. Now, a product life cycle resembles that of like a normal human life cycle. You get born, you grow up, or you start to, you know, develop. You grow up, meaning you mature, and then you start declining. You get older, and then you reach the end in terms of which is ultimately death. Now, it's the same thing that a product follows. If we can all famously remember why they don't make the City Golf anymore, that's now VW South Africa, it's because the City Golf had reached its end of product life cycle, or it's reached the end of its life cycle in terms of the product. That product, guys, had been in existence for 30 years. 30 years. So, on average, if you look at a 30-year window, it resembles, you know, it's 30 human years. And in essence, that same type of sort of like analysis, analogy, you know, approach regarding that life cycle would allow any company to take the next step to replace that product that they've now ended and replace it with something else. Then what was something else? It was the VW Up. It was a 3-cylinder version, very much smaller, much more compact, used less fuel, had airbags, had ABS, had, what's the thing's name? Power steering. But unfortunately, you know, looking at now, the situation now, that product was also not as well received as first thought. So you've got to look at the balances of a product's life cycle. And this is within terms of that product development or product innovation discussion. Now, product innovation, guys, can either be a new product. Here's your strategies that you can look at in terms of if you're a manufacturing or if you're a manufacturing organization or if you're just a service provider, meaning you're a company that provides services. So you can look at one of the following combinations in terms of how your product gets innovated. Now, how your product gets innovated is of one of two things. Either you make use of an existing product and you need to spruce it up a bit. Think of it as being a chef, you know, and as a chef, you try to reinvigorate a recipe, you know, a recipe that we all know at home. And let's, for example, say it's a recipe in terms of how to make pap. But everyone knows how to make pap has the usual ingredients as well as also the amount of time. The more maize meal you add in terms of making it, obviously makes it a little bit more sturdy, gives it a little bit more starch in it, makes it a little bit more filling when you eat it. However, now as a chef, you might reinvigorate that approach. Remember, product development can be anything, and product innovation can be anything. So product innovation, product development do bridge and they do overlap into each other, the two concepts and the two theories. Second onto that is also product innovation can be a reason for product development. And so at the same time, product development can be a reason for product innovation. Now, here's what we look at, guys. For example, product innovation is one of the best examples that we've ever seen take place, and this once again being a car example or a car company. That being the VW Polo Vivo, or the Polo Vivo as we all knew it. That car started off as the Polo Player, came in two variants in the 90s, late 90s, either as a hatchback and as a sedan version. It had three engine variants, 1.4 liter, 1.6 and 1.8 liter. The 1.8 liter was the most expensive variant, but the most often bought variant was the 1.6 liter. The 1.4 liter is the one that you can probably still scratch out somewhere in someone's garage here in Namibia. But in all three cases, it was a good sort of like mid-entry level type of car in terms of how you could first and foremost, get into owning a car. If you could not own the full-on Golf at that stage, or you thought that the city Golf was a little bit too small or a little bit too immature for you in terms of the product, how the product resonates with you as a person, or if you couldn't get into the Jetta range, or if you couldn't get into the, you know, one of the other cars that were found in the stable, the Polo Player at that stage was your sort of like buy-in phase. That Polo Player was then developed into the Polo. Also, once again, sedan and hatchback variants. They dropped the 1.8 liter engine variant. They only stuck to 1.6 and 1.4 liter. They also introduced a turbo diesel variant. If you guys can remember the TDIs, which were the pretty good examples, but were pretty loud because it almost sounded like you were literally driving a tank, not a tank, more a tractor, but a very powerful tractor that had a turbo diesel and was fuel injected. From that variant of the VW Polo, they then progressed on to the you know, the next phase in announcing that the City Golf will be discontinued past 2010 and that the VW Polo will now substitute in as their next entry level, or the Vivo Polo will substitute in as their next entry level product in terms of the entire VW product range. And what they did at that stage was then reintroduce the Polo just above the Polo Vivo. So now you had two Polos. One, a slightly more affordable variant of the other. And the other, meaning the opposite of the spectrum, being a slightly more expensive variant of the other. In that same sense, guys, you saw product development plus product innovation taking place parallel to each other. They were actually the same thing, combined into each other. Now, with product innovation, as mentioned, this can be an existing product that gets repurposed. It's also what they call, under a marketing series known as product segmentation, or you take a product and you reposition it in the market. If anyone remembers the Boston, what's that matrix name, the product matrix, in terms of how you understood your products, you had a cash cow, you had a star child, you had a cash cow, star, problem child, and a dog product. I don't know why they use the term dog, because a dog is a pretty noble animal, but they had a dog product. The dog product was your product that was at the end of its life cycle, usually always a product that was just not receiving good a good reception by the market. Your cash cow was your household name product that was constantly making you money. You could depend on that product to make you the money, and that product would always fly the flag in terms of your earnings and sales potential. You had a star, you had your star product. Your star product is your premium product in your product range. That product was, you know, said to be the next cash cow. It was said to be the next cash cow. That's obviously if you do your SWOT or your TOES analysis properly in terms of positioning and utilization of the strengths and opportunities of what the product and the market can offer. And then at the same time, minimizing and avoiding any threats and weaknesses that might come about. Now, in that same vein, from your star, you had your problem child. Your problem child was a product in development, or a product that's just not taking off. It's a product that is between your dog phase, or either your cash cow phase, or it's a product that's between your cash cow phase and your star phase. So in that same sense, you see the options in terms of how your product innovation can position you, can guide your vision, can guide your strategy, your overall marketing strategy in terms of what to do with a product. Now here's where we go in terms of what other examples of product innovation sometimes looks like. So here's one of the things for any of us who have paid attention over the last 7 years in terms of Microsoft or Windows products. What they've done in terms of the Windows products, we've moved through 3 versions of Windows so far. I bought Windows 8 in 2015. I was upgraded, or Microsoft believed that the whole world needs to be migrated towards Windows 10. I didn't have an option. I was just told reboot. And I said, okay, I'm not even given an option. Reboot. Now we see Windows 11 over here. So in terms of looking at the product lifecycle in its conventional scope as well, you as a company can also kickstart the product innovation, or you can even kickstart the product or you can decide whatever you know direction to take with the product lifecycle itself. Because with innovation, you're trying to stay ahead in terms of your competition. You're trying to stay ahead as well as also providing the innovation to your customers, or the innovation to a market. Now we get from there. And in terms of taking a look, in terms of why this also still matters. Now, in turn, this is about fueling a demand for greater personalization. It's also factoring in the multitude of digital channels that is resulting in constantly changing customer expectations. And that's why I mentioned that as a company, you would want to stay ahead of these expectations, meaning you want to be on the ball. Second on to that is also adding in the factor that there are those customers that will have varying personalized expectations and also, sort of like interactions with the products that you make available. So it's also about trying to cover all bases as best as possible. Now, this in turn fuels the demand. That's not the digital channels that offer this further generation of changing customer expectations. This in turn fuels a demand for greater personalization or the ability to market, advertise to, and even develop a product or services that suit individual consumer preferences. For example, one of the best products ever created so far has been the smartphone. You can personalize your smartphone experience or interaction with your smartphone the way you want it. It's an extension of you. It's one of the best products that was ever created. Not even the computer comes close, the PC or the laptop comes close to what the smartphone had been able to do. Could generate an extension of your being. Now, connecting innovation to business success is another balance that you have to figure out. And this balance, and this is before we even, get to touch on the customers, this balance is a discussion where you have to accept that there are, of course, purely business-focused reasons to innovate. You cannot innovate just for the fun of it, guys. There's no such thing, just for the fun of it. For the fun of it is left for artists, is left for actors, is left for people that fall into the creative category of things. Because for the fun of it means that one of two things happens. Either you get true genius in terms of innovation, or you get sort of like only a segmented approach to this, meaning that what I like is not always what you like. And what you like does not always mean what I like. So it's about balancing that act. It's about weighing up that discussion point. It's about seeing how to best cover all bases. Because in actual fact, a product innovation is there to stay ahead of a trend, to stay ahead of trends, or to determine the next trends in product innovation or in product when customer satisfaction, and also to be ahead of the curve with your competition. Ahead of the curve in your competition would mean something like what has happened with like your TV standards. And I'm drawing you back to that discussion I had in January with regards to resolution standards, screen sizes, as well as also the definition standards or the resolutions that you get to watch content in. Behind that, if you guys have not ever seen in terms of or noticed in terms of how these technology companies do something like this, how do they determine something like this? It's through one very important factor. And it's an important factor also that our, that forms part of the fourth industrial revolution's whole scope, whole approach. This is product research and development. Now, product research and development, guys, takes place in the following fields. In photography, well, let me do this. I'll encompass it. I'll make it more universal. In consumer electronics, in things like motoring your vehicles, also in things like computing. And I'm not talking about computing being the PC in front of you. The PC in front of you would then fall under consumer electronics. I'm talking about computing in the sense of how to transfer information at the best possible rate, at the most sustainable rate, and to make it commercially viable in a market. That's the type of what, that is what I'm looking at. Computing. Now, computing is similar to like an architect drawing up designs. Researching the designs, meaning that it gets sort of like rubber stamped by an engineer, a structural engineer, or whatever engineer that is always associated with construction projects, and that design gets sold to a market. And then the market goes and develops it. That's what research and development is all about. It's usually contained to something like university centers. University centers get these budgets, and then they research, and then they take the research, and they sell the research off to companies. that's what product innovation looks like. Now, in terms of that perspective, in terms of, you know, that aspect of product innovation, which does feature into a company dictating and determining and informing what the next step is, you look at one of the few things, because all of this has to, first and foremost, result in a return on investment, has to result in the form as a return on investment. And a return on investment means where you get your money back for what you invested in as a company, as a business person, as a business owner. You get your money back from what you invested in. The investment would look at changing the next consumption trends. Consumption trends would look like in the form of, for example, let's say, you know, generating recipes on food packets, or, you know, like, let's say on a mayonnaise bottle, that kind of stuff, where the company tries to communicate, consume more, you get to make these lovely recipes, or have a competition and you get to use our product that forms part of these recipes. And if you collect all the recipes that all the distinct recipes that we have, because they're all numbered, you get to win a grand prize. Stuff like that. Because product innovation, unfortunately, also has to be marketed. It has to be advertised. I can't say marketed, but it has to be advertised. Because the advertising element is then another strategy to assist product innovation. I'll draw you another very famous example that took place at the end of last year, that being Meta's rebranding, or Facebook's rebranding into Meta. Now, that they usually call that strategy, as I mentioned, rebranding. Rebranding is a big exercise because it includes anything that has your colors or that has the company's name on, from a letterhead to a t-shirt to the building signage to the websites, to the platforms or the technologies that you're in charge of, everything, this whole rebranding strategy cascades across the board for an organization. Now, that was a branding innovation. Well, that was branding and innovation that took place there. But what you also did not see is the name change was in effect to rebrand a specific product that is in development for Meta. They are in development for the product, or they are in the course of developing the product. So it's more to distance themselves from one of their already existing products, which is the Facebook experience, the platform that has been in existence for 14 years now. They've got Instagram, they've got WhatsApp. So the next bridge was generating another set of demand for the social media experience, that being the metaverse. But I told you already, guys, in much of the Tech Eagle discussions that I had about the metaverse, or Meta's approach to the metaverse, is that the metaverse has already been in existence. It already has been in existence. You've seen it, I've seen it. You've experienced it, I've experienced it. So what they actually did was taking a product that already exists and repurposing it as well. So they did two product innovations, or they implemented two product innovation strategies simultaneously. Repurposing what is already in existence and trying to invite as broad a customer base as possible into it. Because the examples where I've given you in terms of where the metaverse really exists has been in virtual reality, as well as also in computer gaming, or the computer gaming market. Though they are the two best examples of it. Then you take a look at the second strategy. The second strategy had been developing their own metaverse. So they took something that already exists, repurposed it, and then they mentioned in the same vein, we are in development of our own experience for you. So they implemented two product innovation strategies at the same time. Now, in that same vein, guys, it brings...
Ushua kokusha oshikwiririmba oshina hepero momunyovye tupeva peyuva. Monao, for global parts, tunova ungure ovapuike, ovonongo, nova harupu okukuvatera. Tunovitenda peke peke vyo vikwiririmba okudhako Volkswagen, Mercedes-Benz, Audi, BMW, nui natuwa weather ovitenda vyo Toyota. Wedhako omanao manene shimuna omaile no topra. Tuvada pomura rimbui o Naismith mo Southern Industrial Area. Po Global Parts, tukupa onji viro othemba, ohunga, no vitenda vyo vitore. Global Parts, global reach for best local advice and prices.
Speak your mind while respecting the opinions of others.
How can you say Namibia was brought on a silver platter when so many people were massacred?
No, that's not what I mean. Mm-hmm. I mean on the silver platter.
In terms of the infrastructure.
Of the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You know, there were schools, there were roads, there were...
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
To grab that victory against Ivory Coast will be a big one for us. It will be the first...
Or social position mm-hmm. to raise a child. What does that mean? Baby dumping.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
The commander say hold fire, they hold fire. When the commander says fire, they fire. You know, they are trained to kill. We are trained to arrest people and bring them before court.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
That's why some of us wear unbranded clothes. Because it's about selling their product.
So talk on Eagle FM. Eagle FM, the eye.
And we return, guys, from that short, slightly extended break. Just needed a little bit of a, breather. Now, in terms of connecting innovation to business success, you have to remember, as mentioned before, the, very detailed examples that I gave you, that everything is business focused. The whole decision about innovating or repurposing a product is about the business survival. It's essential, guys. It's essential. Now, what do I mean by this? Now, when you invest in innovation and product development, you see benefits across your entire organization. What does this mean? It impacts everyone from executives to sales and marketing to customer service and beyond. Because what it does, what this little bit that I'm sharing here basically implies is you see everyone having a buy-in process. A buy-in process allows people to, feel a little bit more special about what they're actually working towards. Now, that's in the business framework. The business framework sees, wow, so the manufacturing department has a buy-in, say, in terms of developing a prototype of the new product. Remember, product innovation can be an old product that is just repurposed, or it can be a completely new product as well. Remember, it's either one of those two aspects. In most cases. I say in most cases. Let me add that caveat in there. In most cases. Now, when the company is busy with a product development process, either innovation or development, what they approach is usually they take a look at the manufacturing department, the production department. Then they take a look at the marketing and sales teams. Then they take a look at the strategic executives, meaning the management and the board of directors and so on and so on. And everyone has a buy-in in terms of, what is the product supposed to achieve. Now, ultimately, the ultimate goal is to achieve sales on the product. It's the ultimate goal, to achieve sales. If it doesn't matter, in terms of strength, as long as it acts as a benefit, meaning it is a positive. It doesn't result in you experiencing a loss. It has to result in you experiencing a profit, meaning revenue, a revenue stream. Now, one of the major things with regards to this is the excitement factor for people that work in the company who's approaching this approach. Now, that excitement factor, guys, obviously it is a psychological approach. It's a psychological boost because the whole teams in the overall organizational team will see, wow, we're working towards something. There's an actual goal. There's an actual thing that we're being part of. But here's the other thing also. You get two types of things as well. You can get something like a multinational, for example, like Sony Corporation, that can tell you, listen, guys, all our decisions take place in Japan. If you're here in Namibia, just do your customer service and, you know, your other extension works here. That's all. Meaning that even if you find yourself in the biggest companies in the world, you at some stage you might realize that you won't be part of this new product development. So this is another discussion that I'll leave for another time slot regarding how big can your company get in terms of everyone forming part of the overall strategy, the overall marketing, branding, promotional, you mention it strategy, because all those strategies come out of your marketing approach. Now, coming through with that, the entire organization will feel like they will have a say or insight into product development and innovation. It impacts everyone across the board. Now, the main four reasons that come through from this, and this plays into the pursuit of innovation and how it acts as a driver of business success, is that it takes a look at the next four basic reasons. These four basic reasons are expansion, competition, customer retention, and talent acquisition. Now, if you're a company that produces a product, meaning you produce it, you've got a production department, you've got a design department, you've got all those elements happening there. Such a company will take into account in terms of their expansion, their rate of expansion. It also relates to your growth in a market. Now, rate of expansion or growth, for that matter, takes a look at in terms of how successful innovation begets more innovation. So if you've got successful or a proven track record of your organization or company implementing innovation, then you will have no problem in entering into another innovation phase for the organization. It should also not be a deterrent if one of your innovation phases actually resulted in some form of failure for the product or market reception. Because I've seen so many examples where a product was not actually well received in its first, year of release. But what has happened if the company takes the product, allows it to still be in the market, but then the next upscaled versions of it, all the bad reception, all the negativity, all the bad publicity about the product, they improve on that. They take those factors, they improve on it, and then the next version of the product is probably one of the game-changing products within a market segment. This has happened in the car manufacturing industry multiple times. I mean, you have to take something like Elon Musk's Tesla brand. The Tesla brand was at some stages, people were writing negative publicity about the car. If you put the car on cruise control, the car, the sensors or the computers or the cameras or whatever on the car sometimes does not distinguish fast moving objects very quickly. People have unfortunately lost their lives in pretty bad accidents because of putting the Tesla car on autopilot and the car just runs and the car does not pick up that there's an obstruction or there's something happening in the road and the person probably was trying to sleep a little bit and then they didn't wake up or they were busy with some other act in the car. Tesla's had that bad negativity. The same also for Google, even when Google was busy with their self-driving car program. The unfortunate thing is, in all those examples, the ultimate negative publicity has included some form of someone dying, unfortunately, because it's self-driving cars. But that has not stopped them from innovating. That has not stopped them from trying to achieve, one or other form of being competitive. Now, on that same note, guys, we'll quickly step into a short ad break. From the ad break, we'll come right back, heading into the rest of our segment here on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM.
Hmm. The first free-range eggs produced and packaged in Ondangwa, Walenga eggs, are now available in 6s and 18s. These fresh free-range eggs are produced daily and have a shell life of over 28 days. Now listen up. Free-range eggs are the most nutritious and organic eggs available for human consumption. Mmm, just yummy. We at Walenga Eggs also want to give every Namibian an opportunity to own a share in our value chain. So if you want to sell or distribute Walenga Eggs, call Omalaiti Foods at 0811-273622 or 0811-660707. This is a first for Namibia. Walenga Eggs, the great white.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lodritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0. Speak your mind while respecting the opinions of others.
How can you say Namibia was brought on a silver platter when so many people were massacred?
No, that's not what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I mean on the silver platter.
In terms of the infrastructure.
Of the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were schools, there were roads, there were...
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
To grab that victory against Ivory Coast will be a big one for us. It will be the first...
Or social position to raise a child. What does that mean? Baby dumping.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
The commander say hold fire, they hold fire when they come.
Now we come back, guys, from that quick extended break right there and heading into the four main reasons that I explained in terms of your strategies for connecting innovation to business success. Now, in the same vein, guys, here's what we got to look at. First off, the expansion, competition, retention, and talent acquisition. Now, the expansion aspect has to do with how far your company can grow in terms of growth, or your company can expand. And also, you've got to factor in by which nature it enables your business to grow in terms of its scale and its growth. So you've got to look at the expansion or the rate of expansion that you have to look at. Too quick can probably be good and also provide its own problems. Too slow could leave you behind as playing catch up a lot of the times, which is not one of the reasons why a lot of people actually go into business in the first place. You don't want to be someone playing catch up, but there are actually companies in this world, markets in this world, that just play catch up. They check what other people are doing. They have a look at the other markets and they go like, okay, I see that Dwight is developing something interesting there. They announced it through a public, a press release. So we go have a look there in terms of what is their product all about? What is their next strategy? You get copycats. There's nothing wrong with it in terms of it that it's not the same technology or the same product functions, but you do get copycat manufacturing processes. You then look at competition in terms of these four elements in terms of connecting innovation to business success. So your competition aspect or your competition, facet or, approach is all about the unique solutions that you and your product provide or develop that helps to differentiate your business among the competition. This is also known as your main strategy. Your main strategies. I've mentioned these main strategies before. It's known as your cost-effective strategy, niche marketing, or differentiation. There are only three of them. Now, you do get hybrids of these three. But the most unsustainable one is the niche marketing one. It's pretty surprising that no one has bought out Tesla yet. I mentioned this because, well, here's the thing. If you had to look in at the...
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
The first free-range eggs produced and packaged in Ondam.
Now getting back, guys, and having a look at the competition aspect, in that same sense, these strategies, as mentioned, all point towards one thing: how competitive, how best competitive you can be in a market setting. Now, as mentioned, it's the differentiation strategy, it's the cost-effective strategy, and it's also known as the niche marketing strategy. The most unsustainable one, as mentioned, is the niche marketing one. Because in the niche marketing one, the big guys, the big fish, or the big players have a look at what you're doing and they go like, okay, let's go and buy ABC company out. It's the thing that Google and Facebook are currently being, or Meta, are being sued for by governments and regulators, that they've become aggressive monopolies. Not monopolies through the sense of they buy you out and then they take your technology and then they implement it under their name. No, they buy you out to kill off competition. It's one of the easiest forms of monopoly. It's also one of the easiest and most aggressive strategies that you can find in any business sense. You get bought out and then you have to sign a, if you're the company owner, a non-disclosure or a, what do they call it, a sort of like a trade, almost like signing a trade secrets, a non-disclosure agreement or NDA in some form. It bans you from practicing the same, in the same market, in the same industry for a, you know, a limited time frame. Which is not supposed to be the case unless you take the money. If you take the money, the NDA is, well, that agreement is attached to the money. So it's one of those strategies that they've actually been accused of, and the European Commission is constantly investigating these two organizations for it. So you've got to be careful, guys, in terms of if you're going to be doing niche, in terms of your strategy, if you're going to be a niche company providing niche products and serving a niche market segment, be careful. Be very careful. Now, in the same sense, it gives you a boost to your own revenue in terms of how competitive your business will be. And it will also nudge the entire industry in a positive direction. That's with regards to the competition element. Now, as I mentioned, guys, this is giving you the positive perspective, and I've given you the negative perspective in terms of how strategic you can be as a company. If you're in the niche marketing, or if you're in the niche competitive strategy, the unfortunate thing is there's always someone with bigger money, more clout, more capability, more capacity than you. It's a fact. Then in the next phase or the next segment, you've got customer retention to look at. So customer retention is all about you trying to stay ahead of your existing customer base. So in terms of doing business, you have three strategies to work with in terms of approaching your customers. You've got new customers that you want to generate. You've got existing customers that you've got to regain, maintain, and retain. I say retain twice because you constantly have to retain them. And thirdly, these are customers that were your customers. They were not as loyal as your original customers, but they are customers that have made use of many products from many companies across the market. That is the customer that you also want to attract constantly. Repeat business for any company is the lifeline to its survival. So your main aim has to be repeat business. Repeat business. Every day, all day, every day. Remember it like that. Repeat business. It's not about once-off selling. It's not about once-off deals. You want repeat business. Repeat business is customer retention. And if you can maintain that, you have no problem in your innovation exercises. Second on that is also the most important thing that allows you to have product innovation or any form of innovation in your company. And this being talent acquisition. Now, talent acquisition is all about trying to get the best skilled people to work with you or to work for you. The best skilled people bring knowledge. They bring expertise. They bring skills. They bring various other factors that allow them to firstly make your company competitive and secondly allows you to see them provide their expertise in the field in a real setting. Now, talent acquisition includes top-tier employees that want to work for businesses that are at the innovative forefront of the industries. Now, you would be sitting there thinking, well, Dwight, that's only a handful of industries here in the country. That being, firstly, in the mining production. Secondly, if you're in the banking sector or in the IT sector of the country. Doesn't matter. You can be one of the best sort of like business development people or one of the best executives, for example, in the tourism industry. If you guys didn't know, the tourism industry can be revamped 50 times over. You can be one of the top executives even in the farming industry. You can be one of the best executives even in the, even in the kapana industry. You can name it. Wherever you can sell something, you can name it. Because at one or other stage, innovation has taken place. Innovation can be anything. It has taken place. It's just the matter of it being sold constantly, used for a purpose in terms of in like a business purpose to generate some form of business, competitive business structure, or it aims to provide one other function that is actually also part of a business venture, or you just, you know, retouching something. But if there's nothing there in the sense where you can detect where it is actually done for business sense, then it's just for fun. And things that are done for fun are not reliable. They're not reliable. Or if they're for fun, it's a creative, meaning it's an artist or it's a designer or it's a, you know, one or other content creator that's just doing things for their own, for excitement purposes. You can even be someone that can do talent acquisition even in the content creation sector. Now, as we head into the last 7 minutes of today's discussion, guys, product and innovation is not done by any mean feat. We're not done. Because here's what you have to understand. In the marketing theory of doing business, you've got four things. Technically, they expand to seven, but you've got four main ones. Your product, your price, your place of distribution, and your promotional strategies. They're also known as the four pillars of the marketing theory. Now, these four pillars, or these mainstay pillars of your marketing theory, there's only one thing that actually allows you to generate money, a revenue. There's only one thing that works towards directing or generating revenue. It's your price. Now, you cannot have a price for something if you do not know what you're selling. And here, what you're selling is going to be your biggest headache ever. Because what you're selling determines what your price is going to be. Determines how big or how low your price is going to be in a market segment. Determines how competitive you will be viewed by customers, the market, your competition, and even internally, your employees, executives, your board of directors, you name it. Now, I know I'm mentioning the price already, but product innovation is all about survival, surviving. It's not about making a profit. It's about surviving. The profit is something that is for, you know, what is usually known as the chief executives, the company owners and all that. That's what they say. That's what they aim to achieve. But for the organization, it's all about survival. From month to month, from target to target, from season to season. Doesn't matter if you're a crop farmer. You have a target to achieve. You have a target to achieve. Now, taking a look at this. Now, no company has ever said that it didn't want to succeed. There's no such thing of such a company existing. They all want to achieve. And it can also still sound a little alarming as to hang so much promise on a product innovation, especially if what you're selling is doing well currently. And you've also carved out a nice niche for your business, meaning your market segment where you are king, where you can call yourself king. Now, here's the other thing. There's good news and bad news. The good news is that you might be able to skate by for a while without needing to fundamentally change anything of your product offerings. When this happens, it's usually known as sort of like the phase in terms of where you need to monitor how things are going in the market with regards to what product you're offering. The bad news is that the chances of that happening currently, in the current circumstances in terms of globalization, capitalism, all those other terminologies that factor into the current state of how business is done, your chances of that staying a constant for a short period of time is very slim. That's the bad news. And we're talking not about like a month or 2 months even. We're talking about something like a week, 5 days, 2 days, even a day of you just observing how the rest of a market reacts to your product innovations. And the market, remember I mentioned, is all stakeholders, internal and external. Now, there are 10 principles of customer strategy that forms part of that even. And this was developed by two theorists known as Thomas Ripsum and Louis Bouquet. Now, Bouquet and Ripsum both mentioned that in the 10 principles of customer strategy, that because technological breakthroughs are now common in nearly every industry, customers expect big changes to be a regular occurrence. And if I'm drawing you guys back to staying ahead of expectations, staying ahead of trends, or even determining the next trend, that's where your product innovation comes in. The unfortunate thing is, because of the connectability, the technological advances, this has now become a run-of-the-mill practice. So almost every day, every week, you've got to be thinking about where to from here. And it is important, guys, because the where to from here discussion determines what do we do next. Now, Ripsum and Bouquet both say that the most successful companies continually experiment with innovations that make life better for a customer. Customers appreciate companies that can do this effectively time after time. It signals out the reliability, firstly, of the product and the company, which adds into positive association in terms of innovation to the company. And secondly, you get to stay ahead of the trend. You get to stay ahead of various discussion points with regards to this. Now, on this lovely Tuesday, you know, late morning session, this brings us up to the end of today's brand conversation in terms of product and innovation. Because tomorrow we're going to end off in terms of how you're going to get that product innovation right. and to ensure that that balance is properly, you know, exploited. That will bring us to the end of the brand and conversation discussion on product and innovation. It'll take us into the next level from Thursday onwards. And on that note, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday and stay tuned to your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM.
On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.